Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, a program that values the potential of knowledge, collaboration, and growth. The show is hosted by Denise Griffiths, who is known as an intensely curious nerd in stilettos. Each Wednesday, she is joined by co-host Ben Gay III, a renowned figure in the sales world. Ben is recognized for introducing The Closers, one of the most popular and powerful sales training materials ever produced. Having been mentored by Dr. Napoleon Hill himself, Ben has gained a wealth of knowledge in sales and life. Throughout the show, Denise and Ben delve into the world of sales, entrepreneurship, and success, exploring Ben's vast experience from guiding and mentoring countless professionals to achieve unparalleled success in their careers.
Good morning, listeners, and welcome to another episode of the Closers Inner Circle podcast, hosted by Your Partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and together with my co-host, Ben Gay III, we dive into the world of sales mastery with gems from The Closers Part 2 each week, most weeks at any rate. These books, 1 and 2, are widely known as the Sales Bibles. And today we are delving into the world of sales mastery with Ben as he shares a personal revelation in The Closers Part 2, page 215. The chapter title is And Another Thing, and I love that title. So here we get a glimpse of Ben's journey, where years of dedicated study and real-world experience have culminated in a profound understanding of the sales craft. And on this particular page, or chapter actually, Ben opens up about the fruits of his labor, meaning a substantial collection of powerful sales material. And this isn't just a stack of scripts and techniques. It's a reflection of his lifelong commitment to honing his skills and understanding what truly drives success in sales. And Ben's story isn't about flashy successes, although he's got some of those, or overnight triumphs. It's about the everyday grind, the small victories, and the lessons learned along the way. And his down-to-earth approach reminds us that mastery is a journey, it's not a destination, and that every experience contributes to our growth. So as we explore page 215 of The Closers Part 2, let's take a moment to appreciate the wisdom gained from years of dedication and hard work. His insights serve as a reminder that sales success isn't about what you know, but how you apply that knowledge with authenticity and perseverance. Ben, it's Wednesday, my favorite day of the week.
That didn't sound like a question or anything. So I was just sitting here obediently waiting for a question.
Every day I tell you, I'm going to have to talk to your wife. You cannot get mean with me. I'm fragile. I'm a fragile Southern blossom of, never mind.
Yeah, I can't even say it. I was raised around Southern women. Don't try and mess with me. I was beaten into submission long before you and I met. So
I couldn't even finish the sentence. I was so full of bullcorn.
Was it? Rosalind Carter was called the steel magnolia, or the soft fist in an iron glove, or something. And not to get political, I'm not a big fan of the Carters. However, she was a great example of being soft and sweet and behind the scenes running the country. So,
yeah, I think Mrs. Reagan was as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. These are women you knew not to mess with them.
Well, I was raised in a female environment. My mother and sister were both strong, wonderful women. And then mother was the head of the Women's Golf Association over at East Lake Country Club, just a couple blocks down from our house. And so through that and caddying and hanging out with them, I met, any given Women's Golf Association day, I was around 50 or 100 strong, successful women. And so I just grew up, and then I went to Macy's, where it's a woman-dominated business, and then into the cosmetic. I'm skipping over a few things, but then into the cosmetic business, women-dominated, and the personal development business, lot of guys in the old days up on stage, but the women were really running the businesses. And I quickly figured that out. So people, you know, nowadays they say, well, how do you work with a woman? I said, fearfully and
With
with,
extreme caution.
with extreme caution and great respect. I'm
There
not
you go.
fighting that fight again.
No. And you know, you'll hear people say, oh, I can't work with women. Listen, I used to be one of those people when I was younger and far more arrogant than I am now. Picture that.
Yeah,
I'd
well,
like
hold
to
on.
be a
Let me get a word picture in my mind. Okay, go ahead.
got it? Okay. I didn't like women. I just didn't. I wasn't jealous of them. I just found them to be remarkably petty and, you know, a little bit, I don't know, not much depth until I started working with them and went, I am so sorry. And I hope you didn't see me the same way I was seeing you, because now we're going to have trouble. So, but you learn as you go. I mean, some of my very dearest friends are women. I would have never expected that to happen when I was younger, but here we are, and I trust them and I depend on them.
Which is another thing, even as a man, I trust them and depend on them. The answering service business, 150 employees when I started the National Communication Center, the call center industry, 150 employees in the building at any given time, and I'm guessing 10 of them, grand total, were men. Everybody else, from the newest telephone representative who just walked in the door and put on a headset, to the head of accounting, to the head of this, to the head of this, to the call center managers, all of them women. I just found it easier and more reliable, et cetera. But I did used to run ads that today I think would put you in jail. I wanted women to work for me that were 35 or older, had no small children at home, and I spelled all that out. I can't believe no one said anything, because what I didn't want some beautiful young girl who was going to go to Big Sur and try and find herself a week after she started, nor did I want to hear about the mumps and the measles and all the problems that come with small children. But over time, I eased up on that, and nobody noticed. And it didn't affect the quality of anything. Somehow, some way, they got it all done anyway. And
Yeah.
so I'm just a big fan. Besides all the male, female obvious reasons, I am a big fan of females in business. And when I look back fondly at my career and think about, well, what about this company and what about this company? So women's faces pop up, our attorneys, the heads of this and the heads of that and the managers and so on. I had a call center go south one day. The manager, I call it the General MacArthur concept. You know, MacArthur was left out in the Philippines so long and in Japan, where he thought he was a god. He thought he was the emperor of Japan and a god unto himself. And he began ignoring and arguing with President Truman, who, much to his surprise, fired him. So I had a lady running a call center down in Sacramento when we had them spread out in four different call centers. And she got the MacArthur complex. And somebody said, what are you going to do about it? And I said, well, I'm going to canter. I just got to think about who I'm going to replace. And then I went, boom, Sandra Nomer. She was a sales rep, worked downstairs in the main office. Selling people distributorships and so on. And I called Sandra. I said, come up here, hon. And she came up to the office and I said, I want you to go to Sacramento, get Bina's, I won't use her last name, but get Bina's keys, tell her she's canned, and take over the call center. And she said, well, I don't know anything about call centers. I said, you'll figure it out by dawn. So just go do it. And she did, and it was a huge success. Wound up running all four, combined them into one, which was not technically possible when we started, but it became so. And then when that business ended, opened up her own call center, Fortune 800, it was called, and ran it for herself. And she said, thank God, one day to me, thank God Bina gave you trouble, or else I wouldn't own this business today because I didn't think I knew how to run it. I said, how long did it take you to figure it out? She said, oh, certainly within 24 hours, I had most of it down. And I thought, I've proved. And when we had four call centers, all four were run three shifts a day by women. So I'm a big fan of your species. And if you go into any real estate office, I just read a figure yesterday locally, 73% or something of all real estate agents, and somewhat higher than that percentage of all successful real estate agents are women.
Why is that,
Hard,
you think?
ha yeah, hardworking, attention to detail.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's probably a big factor. If they say they're going to be there on Wednesday, they actually show up on Wednesday, where we men, as a species, are not so punctual or reliable. So
I
anyway,
found that to be true.
that's it
Yeah.
for telling you how wonderful women
Yeah.
are.
And I don't mean to denigrate males. I mean, you do think differently than we do, and you
Yes.
process information differently than we do. And something that we may find important, like show up on time.
Yeah, that would
We're
be
worried
one.
about, yeah. You do that to me twice, we're no longer speaking. I just don't play games with you. So, but when I started my company 20 years ago, geez. It just doesn't seem right. But I started my little digital agency before we really had much of digital to do. I mean, I was still building websites in HTML. We didn't have WordPress. When WordPress came along, I was like, oh, there is a God. I mean, it was just, but I couldn't hire women. We didn't really populate the techie sphere. We do now,
No.
but we
Yeah.
didn't then. And I was
Yeah.
really kind of out there on my own. And I did develop a bit of the MacArthur syndrome because I was the boss. It was my company. Do what you're told, nobody gets hurt. Until I
Here,
realized,
I'll explain this to you slowly.
yeah, three words, listen carefully. But I realized eventually that I was the bottleneck. These people resented me. I wasn't speaking with them in a kind and compassionate way. I was just issuing orders and expecting them to be done. And then I noticed that pretty much across the board, they were just, sloughing off, all males, sloughing off, not really, they would do what they were asked to do and nothing more. And I had to get on a conference call and bow to them. I said, I am so sorry. I didn't realize that I was being a bit of a dictator. I do realize that you all individually and collectively know more about my business than I do because I task you with one thing and you're experts at that one thing. I'm not. I know how to ask you for it. I can probably do it on my own, but I hire you for a reason. So tell me what I need to do to make life easier. And they did. And I
I
muted and I
bet.
cried a bit, but
Well,
mostly because I was so embarrassed.
I started the call center industry with a card table. What I used to call a little old lady, looking back, she was 58 at the time.
How sorry are you now?
well, I was in my late 20s, so if you're 58, you're a little old lady. And that's how we started. And we developed the industry talking across the card table. It also had a dead plant on it for some reason. I guess it was live when we put it there, but it became the legendary dead plant.
Yeah, but you can't water anything on a card table. It will just
True.
crumble. So,
Maybe that's why we didn't. I
yeah,
don't know.
it probably didn't have a plate underneath it.
But we developed the industry, one call at a time. Well, what'd you tell them there? What should we do here? And this, when this comes up again, and so on, and which was easy to do when you had one or two or five clients. When we had 1,800 corporate clients, people like Xerox and so on, plus a lot of important individual humans, you got to have systems. So from time to time, I would come down from my high perch on the second floor, where I became an executive, to the call center just as a mental break, sit down, put on a headset, and start taking calls. And I can't tell you how many times somebody who I didn't even know, I didn't recognize the face, maybe a new hire, would hear me say something to a customer and they'd say, "We don't do it that way, put them on hold." And so I put them on hold and she would correct me and so on. And before I'd go back to the call, I said, "Do you realize that I started this company, I started this industry, and I own the company?" She said, "Yeah, I've heard that, but be sure you do it this way." So it evolved. I tripped on that when you said individually and collectively, you know more than I do. Over time, the business takes on a life of its own. And if you're a micromanager, maybe you can, hold the horses. I don't know why you would, but I've found the advantage of letting them run. And they come up with far better things. I love it when we bring a new employee in. Recently, a couple times in the shipping department, I won't bore you with the stories, but fresh eyes. Somebody walks in, they've been there less than an 8-hour shift and say, "Why do you do this?" "Oh, well, because I don't know. We've always done it that way. What do you see?" And one guy changed a major part of our outgoing shipping, having been there less than two full shifts. It's something we've done for years. It wasn't all that horrible, but he said, "Why do you do this? It would save you time and money if you did it this way." Well, he was not from the publishing business, and I wish he'd been at the call center. We probably could have noticed some of our mistakes much, much faster. One of the things, talking about today's subject, I want to cover with you the and another thing, starting on page 215, is one of the longer chapters in the closers. Part two runs, just looking at the numbers, runs about 40 pages. And I normally write in a Reader's Digest style, one subject, short chapter, next subject, et cetera, because it's easier to write and it's easier for the reader to absorb it that way. But this and another thing is made up of the notes I gathered. In other words, I'd look at a note in one of my boxes of stuff that I've gathered over the years. This from Earl Nightingale, this from Dr. Napoleon Hill, this from Og Mandino, this from people that most of our listeners never heard of that were also great salespeople. And I would write it on a pad. The reason this 40-page chapter, and it's a great one, is possible is because Dr. Napoleon Hill taught me years ago to always have something to write on with me. In my hip pocket is one of those spiral pocket pads, across, they don't hold up for long, but I've got a case of them. And so that's always in my hip pocket. Usually I have that small version of a legal pad with me. It's about 7 inches long and 5 inches wide, it looks like, but it looks like a legal pad. It's just smaller and yellow. If I'm going anywhere where I think some ideas might be getting tossed around, I've got the memo pad and a pen on top of it on the table, lunch table, dinner table, nightclub table, wherever it's written there. And I get kidded a lot about it. They say, "You look like a court reporter." I said, "One of you idiots is likely, odds are, to say something intelligent. And when you do, I'm going to write it down." Well, I was looking through the chapter of today and another thing, and almost the entire chapter is made up of that. Somebody was standing at the front of the room talking in a formal sales manager speaker style. But the majority of that chapter, and it's just filled with great concepts, came from lunches, dinners, casual conversations, and my constant memo pad. If you take nothing away from this today, take this away. You are surrounded by smart people. There was a poem floating around back in the flower child days called Desiderata. And among the phrases in it, and there's a lot of good stuff in it, but among them is listen to the dull and ignorant. They too have their story. Some of the best little tips I picked up over the years came from people with no education and frequently no common sense that they displayed on a regular basis. But occasionally something would pop out, as we say in the South, even a blind pig finds an acorn occasionally. And you can be that, they can be that blind pig that they might say something intelligent that surprises you. You can be the blind pig by capturing it, writing it down. I've heard so many things. I thought, God, that is great. Write it down. Maybe didn't look at it again for 10 years. It's in my subconscious. Sometimes they'll pop out in the middle of a sales presentation. But mainly I have it written. I can refer to it. I've got to ghostwrite a book for somebody. Out comes the box. And I start pulling things out. People would be astounded to know that they are quoted in books, sometimes without attribution because it was a casual conversation, or quoted in books written allegedly by people they've never heard of because I ghost wrote the book for them, and not realizing that it was them at the Savoy Hotel in London casually over kippers said something and I wrote it down. And 10, 15, 20 years later, it pops up in a book written by somebody else. I have a well, like if I never took another note, Denise, I've got enough material. I've written 35 books, roughly. I say roughly because I'm really not sure what it would be the first one, and maybe I missed one or two or whatever, but roughly 35 books. I could write another 35 books without taking another note, just pull out my boxes, pull out a yellow slip of paper and let it trigger my mind and write a chapter. So gather the information. It's great that I did and that you can read it. Get the Closers Part 2. Everything we've ever discussed here, Denise and I, is in that book or the Closers Part 1 or in some of the other books in the series. But it's all because Dr. Hill taught me to capture ideas and write them down. I remember the first time that happened and he signaled my secretary, executive assistant, Marty. He said, get Ben some memo pads. Was because he gave me a good idea. I'm ashamed to tell you, I don't remember what it was, which is the point of the story. And he said, you didn't write it down. I said, well, I'm fine. I'll remember it. And he said, no, you won't. Write it down. And where is your memo pad? I didn't have one. You know, I had pieces of paper around, but he made me systematize it. So I'm a big believer in the daily success system he taught me is just a series of systematized actions. But among the best of them was systematizing, taking notes, writing it down. As the old saying goes, a short pencil is better than a long memory or something like that. For me, that is really true. I've told you this before, but it's typical one long weekend, either a 3 or 4 day weekend. I didn't go to the office, but I have memo pads everywhere, much to Gigi's chagrin. Beside the bed, in the dining room, on both of my desks, in the office, in the bathrooms, and in the kitchen. That one, for some reason, really bothers me. It's all written down somewhere so that I can gather them on this long weekend. I just took notes, one about my business, wasn't thinking about it. After 3 or 4 days of that, I had, when I went around and started tearing off the pages to take them to the office and either act on them or include them in the book, or at the worst, just throw them in the note box. I had 71 fresh ideas that I didn't have as we went into the long weekend. And so I asked myself, self said, huh? I said, how many of those would you have remembered had you not written them down? And it's just a guess.
That's
a
none. Zero, none.
Yeah, probably not one.
Yeah.
Except maybe the most recent one, you know, that I wrote that morning on the way to the office, maybe. But out of 71 ideas, I think literally they would have all been lost. And a couple of them are now businesses. entire businesses. So write it down. Understand that you are surrounded by people filled with wisdom, whether they look like it or not, whether they act like it or not, and they will from time to time give you major breakthroughs in thinking, perhaps without realizing it. But if you don't write them down,
yet
go ahead.
You don't recall them. And a lot of these, you know, you post on Facebook all the time, tidbits from your box
Right.
of memories, and I'm like, oh, that one's brilliant. I wonder how old that is. I don't even want to ask. It could be from 1950, it could be from 1960, but it still exists, is my point.
Yeah. So, and it's a truism.
Yeah.
The most good, great ideas, anyway, last forever. Terminologies change. Even when quoting Aristotle or Earl Nightingale or
Or the
Dr.
Bible,
Hill or the
all
Bible.
of them. You know,
Yeah.
it all gets changed up.
From time to time, I'll quote it and give credit, but I will change the grammar. I'll still say that was the way it was said, but Dr. Hill, for instance, doesn't mention women anywhere. I shouldn't say that. There's probably some place he does, but I don't remember mentioning women anywhere. And all of his quotes are, you know, whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve.
Yeah,
We
I
had
think Wallace Wattles did the same thing. I think they meant mankind, as in men and women. I never take that to heart, ever.
Good. I appreciate that. But others do. So I've gone to changing up, you know, man slash woman, he slash she. But generally, I just correct it to today's vernacular, to
You're the reason
salesperson.
we have those stupid pronouns.
I didn't start it. I'm just trying not to get yelled at.
Well, I'm going to blame you. So I just wrote that down.
So anyway, that's where most of these great ideas came back. It came from, they came from friends of mine who said things, and my clever contribution was I wrote them down.
And you taught me that as well. I think one of the very first conversations we had on this particular Wednesday podcast was about Napoleon Hill telling you to write it down and the system that you created. And I have, and I went and I got my Dayminder. I used to have one, and for some reason I gave it up, but I went right back to it after we started talking. But you know what I also do? I've got a couple of tricks that you are not going to do these, but I'm going to share them anyway. Index cards. I
Oh,
have
sure.
packages and packages of 4x6 index cards. Excuse me. I have, and I'll peel off 10 or 12 of them, put them in my whatever bag I'm carrying. Because, like my stilettos, I have bags. It looks like Nordstrom's threw up in my closet. It really does. That's about my only vice, is shoes and bags. And I don't even go anywhere, but I got them, by golly. But the thing is, I will carry, I have them in my glove box in my car. I have them in my side tables. They're everywhere with a pen, and they get written on and then they get chunked into a box because sometimes I need them, sometimes I don't, but
Or
I don't
not,
throw them
not
away.
yet.
Yeah, exactly.
The your ideas, I'm set in my ways, so I'm going to stay with the yellow memo pads.
Oh, yeah.
But your way, I could make an argument, is a better way, because on a memo pad, I have two within sight of me, one right beside the computer keyboard in case you say something smart, and then I'll write it down. It's
Oh, the
still,
burden is on me.
yeah, it's still blank, but we have
Crud.
time.
Oh, no, we don't. My brain just went blank, and thank you for that.
But when I get through with this sheet on the top of the pad, there'll be 6, 7, 8 ideas. Oh, and the other thing is make your note clear enough when tomorrow you look at it, you have some remote idea of what you had in mind when you wrote it down.
Yeah, that's an issue. That's why I use big markers on the one on my bed, because I'll wake up at 3:18 with my idea and I have to write it down. But I've learned that I can't use a thin pencil or a thin, you know, pen. It has to be a big old giant marker. So I go, oh, well, like that, I got that word. Okay, I can remember it now. The other thing I do, Ben, is, and we've talked about God winks before, and my, excuse me, my best ideas come when I'm in the shower, seriously, or the bathtub, but mostly the shower. And I take my showers hot enough to steam cabbage. I mean, it's a good thing I have a cathedral ceiling. And I have to, turn on the fans before I leave the building practically to get all that moisture out of there. But I go in there because I can relax. And I'll, never run the hot water heater out, but I keep trying. But I write everything down. I start getting these God winks, all these downloads. Excuse me, hang on. Just start showing up, and I write them on the bathroom, the shower stall. And once the steam abates a bit, takes a while, I can go in there, take pictures of it, and then clean the walls. But that's where my ideas come from.
I've
And it
got
could
a
be
for
something that
my
I heard. I never know where it's coming from.
No, absolutely. I have a Formica board about 12 by 12 with two holes drilled in the top hanging on a thin chain over the faucet area with a grease pencil next to it. I don't want to clean the walls. But I don't mind wiping off a 12 by 12 piece of Formica. And that's the same way I do it. Somebody famous, maybe Steve Jobs, I forget who it was, said, every person, he said every man, but in my new life, every person who ever took a shower has had a great idea.
Oh,
The
yeah.
difference is some of us wrote it down, got out of the shower, and did something. And that's when I got my Formica pad because he said, write it down. Get out of the shower, which meant he wrote it down in the shower.
You know,
So I
one of
thought.
my very first ideas was your office on the web, which is my primary website. And this was, like I say, 20 years ago, and I was in the shower. I hadn't gotten smart enough not to try to kill myself slipping on floors, naked, wet, because I went, oh, let me see if that domain is available. I ran screaming across the house because my bedroom, suite is the other side of the building. And thank goodness no lights were on. Nobody could see me because I didn't have a bath towel on. I mean, I had an idea. I had to go bath on it. And I ran across the floor. I did not fall down and break anything. Got to, GoDaddy and got your office on the web, and a business was born. So do whatever it takes to get those ideas working for you. Don't do it naked. That's not always a good idea.
My mind was racing, but I've decided not to say anything out loud.
I set myself up for it, I know, but it's the truth. It's really what happened.
Well, let's do one. I'm out of the book on page 220, and I'd have to read the whole thing to remember if I got it from a specific person. But what it comes the heading on this section is Tuesdays stink in business. Even I heard in the last week or so, Tuesday's sort of a nothing day. It's not Monday, which is exciting or dreaded. It's not Wednesday, which is hump day. It's not Thursday, which is Friday Eve. They have names for all the different things. Tuesday is just sort of there and so on, which had reminded me when I heard it that time and it wound up in the book that I heard something, I overheard something with some of our salespeople that Tuesdays stink. Now, this was before email and messenger and all that stuff. So Tuesday may not be a little milder in spotting, but this is when business came in by mail. Maybe you made the sales presentation, but the check came by mail, the order came by mail. And I heard our team saying something that made me understand that they thought Tuesdays almost wasn't worth coming in for. In fact, if they were going to be late on a day, Tuesdays would be the day. If they were going to leave early, Tuesdays was, in addition to Friday afternoon, Tuesday, was the day. And so I started researching and digging around, and I found out what the problem was then, but you can find patterns like that now. Tuesday was a light mail day because for the mail to show up on Tuesday, it had to have been mailed, probably was mailed on Saturday or Sunday when very few pieces of first-class mail get mailed. So Tuesday is a light mail day. Therefore, in those days, it was a light business day. Therefore, it was Tuesday's problem, not them or anything explainable. And you could slack off on Tuesdays because nothing was going on anyway. Now, that's a long, involved explanation for a simple concept. To this day, I notice it if I pick up the mail. Tuesday is a light mail day. Conversely, a lesson since learned since I wrote that years ago, we now have email days. The best day to send out an email is da-dum. Well, there are days that I think are better. I rarely send an important email blast on a Monday because they come in and they've got so many things to do, dig through. I don't want to be part of their click, delete pile. So emails tend to go out on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and I don't want to be part of their Friday thing. But all of that is a Friday afternoon thing, but all of that is supposition. Here's the truth. You have no control, nor do you know when they open an email. Gigi sells costume jewelry all over the world in her business. I started to say her little business out of habit. It's not a little business anymore. And but she said just this morning, I'm doing an auction on this, and I'm going to start the auction Wednesday night, and it'll run through, I think, 7 days or something, whatever. And I said, why don't you just start it right now? Have you done the work? Have you taken the picture? Yeah. Why? Well, I find if you start an auction on this, well, she may be right. But since you have no control over when they look at it, and the auction is going to run until Sunday night at 6 o'clock Pacific time, she does have a constant time of when they end. I think that makes some sense. But, what difference does it make when you put it out? They'll either see it or they won't. And when they do see it, you don't care if it's Wednesday, Thursday, whatever, because the auction's going to run till Sunday night. And the serious smart bidders will all bid within the last hour on Sunday night. She puts up an auction that's going to run for 7 days, and somebody bids immediately. And I think, what's wrong with you? You're
Yeah,
just.
same thing. It's like, what are you doing? And then you wind up bidding against yourself again.
Yeah,
What are you
exactly.
doing?
I'm in favor of them bidding. It creates excitement and sends it out to more people and so on. But for them, looking at it from their side, you wouldn't know I was looking at an auction until I bid and hopefully won in the last minute. And sometimes it lags a little bit, so I wouldn't press it more than that. But they get caught up in the heat of an auction. Back when I was at Macy's as the assistant buyer and buyer in the housewares department, the gift department, I took a young lady out for dinner, and somehow we wound up at an auction. I don't even know why. Maybe she wanted to go to it. And they put up a pair of outdoor, I guess they were outdoor lanterns, about 8 inches tall, looked like they were Tiffany, but they weren't. You got two of them, and she said, "Oh, I really like those." So I bid early in the thing, and created a little momentum, and it went up and up and up. And I'm making up numbers now, and this was 40 years ago, so it doesn't the numbers wouldn't make much sense anyway. But I almost single-handedly drove the pricing up to $15, let's say, which today would be, times 10, about $150. And I won. I got the lanterns. And I guess I gave them to her. I don't remember ever seeing them again. The next morning at Macy's, I'm going up the escalator between the second and third floor into the giftware department. And there on the end of a shelf are the lanterns I was bidding on the night before, not the actual ones, but bidding on the night before. And we were selling them for $5.99. Today, that'd be $60. But still, I drove the price up by not knowing how auctions work and bidding too soon and too often and so on. And as someone pointed out to me when I was telling them the stories, maybe you ought to get to know your inventory better.
Listen, I talk with my hands. I'm not sure why. If you want me to hush, just grab my hands. I can't talk. I'm done. I'm speechless. But I don't go to livestock auctions anymore either.
Yeah, you can get a cow that way, real
I bought two
accidentally.
little pigs. Then I had to find something to do with them. No more auctions for me.
You spell bacon?
They were babies. They were such babies, I got pillowcases and put them in the trunk of my car. I mean, they were teeny.
That little story from the closers part two took me, well, it took me back to part two, but it also took me back to Macy's. And we were talking earlier about women. There was a lady at Macy's who was the head of stock for the housewares department, the gift department, and something else. That meant that the head buyer, Cy Fisher, and I got credit for buying this and buying that and saving the Regalware cookware company from bankruptcy or pulling them back out of bankruptcy with a very successful promotion. In other words, we did the new stuff, the full page ad stuff. But once it became regular inventory, it was counted regularly by sales clerks. The figures were given to this lady, Catherine Hadsel, head of stock. And she, if we had 7,000 items between housewares and gift, and that's probably about right, she ordered 6,900 of them. And then if they became regular items, she ordered those too. She ran the business while appearing to be a clerk sitting over in the corner. So anyway, I got promoted to the buyer of a section of the housewares department, which meant that Catherine technically worked for me, and I therefore not fully coming to grasp with the fact that being Bengay, 21-year-old assistant buyer, would not impress Catherine Hadsel, who was in her 60s, had been doing this for years. And eight people like, well, I walked in one day and I said, Catherine, as you know, I am Bengay, and I just wanted to introduce myself to you because I guess your new boss. And she said, sit down. When
I
Catherine
was
said,
waiting for that.
yeah, when Catherine said, sit down, you
Or
sat down.
in the deep south, it's take a seat.
Yeah, maybe she said that.
Could
But
be.
she said, so I sat down. She said, pull your chair up. So we were almost knee to knee. And she said, listen to me, young man. I eat assistant buyers for lunch. I don't work for you. I do some paperwork that involves you. And other than that, you'll be polite to me and do as you're told. Comprehendo? I said, yes, ma'am.
I'm not
So
laughing at you, Ben. I'm laughing with you.
I'm still laughing all these years. Sit down. I eat assistant buyers for lunch. And then there was one of those things. Oh, I thought for a minute there, Cy Fisher and I ran this department, but we don't. At least we don't run 95% of it. That's Catherine Hadsel and her little minions out on the floor. And my best job is to stay out of their way. So I made a lot of money letting Catherine be the boss.
Well,
It was in
I'm
far
not going
better
to
hands.
say what I started to say because it was snarky, but you can about picture it in your head. So there we go. But good for you. You had the sense to listen to her and understand that you had a title, you had a position, but you didn't actually have anything to do with it at that moment.
Right.
Think that's where a lot of people make their mistake. Well, I've got the corner office, or they just gave me brand new business cards. I'm the boss. You don't know squat. Take a seat. Take a seat and figure it out. We'll talk again, I don't know, maybe a year from now, but not
Right.
today.
after you figure out where the bathroom is and the,
Right.
and you get settled in. So again, that's learning from people. I learned from that lesson. It's not in the book, but it should be. I learned from that lesson that there are people who know a lot more than you do, and if you'll shut up and listen. She gave me a great idea one time that set my career off in a different direction. I was saying, I'm buying cookware and buying this Miro aluminum and Farberware and so on. And I said, I don't, by this time we were social friends. I'd go to her apartment. Then we wound up living in the same apartment building because she told me to. So my first wife and I moved in there. So she played a big part in my life. But I was moaning one time that I was young and inexperienced and I didn't know the cookware business and particular lines. And she said, let them do it. I said, let who do it? And there was a guy named Dick DeFano. He was the one that created the term things go better with Coke. And
Oh,
the reason he did was he
that's
was
a real
trying to,
thing, isn't it?
yeah, he was
I
trying
mean,
to sell the Miro popcorn poppers.
you're kidding.
And no, get them to put coupons in the cartons and so on. So he said, I'm going to sell you these, but I'm going to give you a slogan that'll make you millions of dollars. What is that, Dick? Excuse me, things go better with Coke. And their response was, send us 10,000 of those Miro corn poppers.
I'll be darned.
And then they changed the national advertising and so on. So anyway, Dick DeFano was older. He was still a young man, but older than I was, more experienced, had that under his belt. And Catherine said, let them run it. And I said, well, how do I do that? She says, you call them in and say, rather than call on me and try and sell me things, decide what I need, put it on an order and bring it to me and I'll sign it. And then say, the only thing that I ask is if you make a mistake in what you tell me to order, that and we're overstocked on it, you'll help me eat the markdowns or you'll take it back. So I said that to Dick DeFano at Miro. And he said, yeah, I'd be happy to. The buyer is handing you the order book and saying, order what you want. And he did. And all of a sudden, we were selling more Miro cookware than we'd ever sold before because he knew his business. He didn't have to sell me on doing it. I made a note when Catherine told me that and instituted it. Then I instituted it with all of our major suppliers, Oster, Blenders, Farberware, the lawnmower suppliers. We had four or five major lawnmower suppliers and so on, made the same deal with all of them. Fast forward 3 years. Now I'm manufacturer's rep. I'm traveling the country and I'm doing very well, setting some sort of records and all. And I go to the houseware show and I walk into this room. I don't know what it was billed as, but I look up in the front. There's Dick DeFano, my old friend from Miro Aluminum. And he's saying, let me tell you a story about a young buyer. And
Uh-oh.
I thought, oh my God. He's going to talk about how I didn't know what I was doing and so on. So he told the story, basically the story, but he didn't mention my name. And he said, and the man who, and I got his permission, and I'm thinking, no, you didn't. He said, and the man who let me do this and with whom I built a big success, and he said, and there have been others, is Dick Oliver. And this guy stands up. Dick had taken that idea. I sometimes wonder if he didn't plant the idea in my head subconsciously, and then I thought I had the idea. But Dick DeFano had gone around his territory, most of the southeastern United States, and taken over the buying from the buyers under that simple concept. And then one day, my father died suddenly, we're at the funeral. And a guy from Big Apple, if you grew up in Atlanta, Big Apple was the biggest grocery chain there. Altman Brothers was the corporate name. I think they're gone, but I don't know. George Altman, one of the Altman Brothers from Big Apple, came up to me and he said, Ben, would you mind if I put this in your dad's coffin? And I look, he it already was full of golf balls and putters and stuff.
Oh.
All of his friends were, putting things in.
Kind of like an Egyptian pharaoh. He was not
Yeah.
to be lacking for anything in the afterlife.
Yep, exactly. And the funny thing is, he was cremated. So I used to think, God, that
Oh.
was a waste of golf balls. But probably the guy at the crematorium took them out
I would
and
think so.
the putters while they were digging the gold out of his teeth.
Garage sale.
It's but anyway, he said, "Do you mind if I put this in the coffin?" And I said, "No, what is it?" He said, "It's an order book, and a pen, and your father was the last person who had the power of the pen, meaning Dad could sit in his office and write up an order for Altman Brothers." For all of their stores, I'm guessing a couple hundred Big Apple stores at its peak, and write it up. And he said, as a courtesy, send me a copy of what I just bought. He said, that's how much we trusted him. So his power, what he called a power of the pen, had been used by my father, who, even though it was technically taught to me by Catherine Hansel and Dick DeFano, as a way to go to the experts and take advantage of their experience and skill and write it down. But that, if I had to be thrown back into the corporate environment and so on, I would go be looking for the experts who called on me. Not someone make this easy for you until I get up and running, and maybe never, but until I get up and running, you're going to run your product line in this location or in this company. Just don't screw me over and take back your mistakes. Fair enough. And I guarantee you they would all say, they go, no, I want to call on you once a week and argue with you.
But
I don't think so.
no. And I was going to ask you, and I've been writing this down. So there were three distinct events that put you in that position: your dad, Catherine, and Dick. Because I while you were talking, I was thinking, how did you know to go say, okay, this is how it's going to happen. This is what I'm going to offer you. That didn't just come out of the blue, did it?
Well, Catherine was a big help in that she said,
Right.
why don't you go to the ones who know what they're doing and ask them what you should do? I went and then refined that a little bit and just turned it over to Dick DeFano. I'm ashamed to say that my father, well, it was at his funeral that I got full confirmation. He
There you go.
may have, I don't remember him ever saying, I thought George Altman was somebody we fought with every Wednesday. And took him to lunch because I would hear the tales of, and then George said this, and his secretary was named Sybil, never knew her last name. My father and Sybil were always at each other's throats until somewhere along, because she was one of those people who appeared to be a secretary but really ran the company, just like Martha, but Marty Connolly, my secretary, and I cringe every time I say that. I should have at least called her my executive assistant, but she ran the company because I didn't. The only thing that got to my desk were those things she either couldn't handle or didn't want to handle or didn't want to take responsibility for. 90% of the stuff that came to her never went any further. She knew what to do. So she ran the company. I may have told you this. One of our vice presidents in charge of sales, Vance Powell, called me one day and wanted to get approval for something. And I said, oh, yeah, okay, that sounds like a good idea. Do it. Or, oh, no, I said, I'll take care of it. And he said, well, let me talk to Marty. And I said, no, I'm going to take care of it. And he said, Ben, this is really important. Let me talk to Marty.
He knew who the power behind the suit
Yeah,
was.
having a conversation with me was interesting
Right.
and pleasant. And when he told Marty that I'd already approved it, maybe that greased the skids a little bit. But he didn't consider it a done deal until it was in Marty Connolly's hands.
I
And
love
in
your
every business, there's someone like that.
Yeah, that's true. And you come across in some businesses when I had to work for other people, rarely. I was always that person. I was the gatekeeper, the dragon at the desk. It's like, nope, you're not. No. I said no.
What, which part of
Yeah.
no don't you understand?
Yeah. And if you push me, it's going to be a hell no. So, Let's talk about Copenhagen. I love this story.
Refresh my memory.
You're talking about this napkin. The napkin, this one came from, would indicate it was from a conversation late one night in Copenhagen, Denmark. And you were probably discussing the common characteristics of the very best salespeople in the world with a couple of old friends, Larry Nelson and Derek Broughton.
Two of the best that I ever worked with.
And that's, I was, didn't even have to finish the sentence. You just did it for me.
Yeah, they were really something. Derek still is. Larry passed away recently. Norway, Sweden, and Denmark were opened up by Larry Nelson for Holiday Magic Cosmetic. That's sort of an example of what we were just talking about. And while I'm flipping through, what page is the Copenhagen story on?
222.
222. There's an example. When we decided to open up, when I was told to open up Copenhagen, Norway, Sweden, and Denmark, I said yes, sir, to William Penpatrick, the owner of the company. I didn't know where Norway, Sweden, or Denmark were. I had to go get a world atlas out to find them. So now I'm going to open them up. And but I had a guy that was reliable, and he used to take on great challenges. It was Larry Nelson, and it's sort of like calling Sandra Nomer to tell her she was now going to run the largest call center in the world on 10 minutes' notice. I called Larry Nelson. I said, "What do you know about Norway, Sweden, Denmark?" He said, "Nothing." I said, "Well, good. Study up because you're going to run them. You're going to be the manager." I knew enough to say managing director instead of president. "You're going to be the managing director, and so make contact with some attorneys there and so on." He said, "Fine." The next time I was directly involved with that operation, I flew over up in our Learjet to see this operation and take bows for the fact that I had opened it up. All I did was called Larry Nelson. Larry Nelson figured out everything else and did it and had it up and running. And then when he hired me years later, he had his own company. He hired me to come speak. And I said, "Do you really like it here?" He said, "Yeah. I'm so glad you were desperate enough to call on me to come." So he had moved back to the United States by the time he died, but basically he became a European simply because he got sent there on short notice. And he got sent there on short notice because he was on my short list of people who could get anything done. Pardon me. I was thinking of him one day. When we started selling the closers, when I got the rights to it and rewrote it and so on, what's now called Part One, I found a printer in San Diego. And we sent him enough money for 50,000 books. I didn't know the publishing business. I didn't know that the average book only sold 500 copies before the author gave up and went on to do other things. I was used to big volumes, so I ordered 50,000 just because that's what you did. And the guy said, "I don't have the money for that to front it." I said, "We'll pay in advance. Can you get it done?" "Oh, yeah." So we paid him in advance. And then the books didn't come, and the books didn't come, and the books didn't come. So I gathered five of my troops together, thinking of Larry Nelson. And I said, "I got a little challenge for you. We've rented a truck for you. I want you to drive it to San Diego, take over the printing plant, learn how to print and bind a book. And I don't want to hear the details of what you had to do with him or to him to make it happen. But we can't afford to lose whatever it was for, $3 a book or whatever back then. We can't afford to lose $150,000. So you're going to become printers, binders, truck drivers, delivery men. Have a good day." Shook their hands and out the door they went, home to get their clothes, I assume. And I'm making up dates, but roughly 2 weeks later, they pulled into the parking lot in that truck with 50,000 books that they had learned how to print, printed in the back of the truck. If you give people, go
What did
ahead.
the guy that you had paid him, how did he take that? Either he was very thankful or he was scared to death or somewhere in
I
between.
think at the end he should be very thankful
I would
because
think.
we didn't have to do other things to him.
You mean like
But
break his knees?
yeah, but I
Okay.
heard that fear had a good deal to do with it. We
Oh,
sat, they
man.
were pretty much normal sized people, but two out of the five were what you would call large people. So five people drive up in a truck and announce that you now work for us and you are going to teach us how to print and bind books. And you're going to help, and we're going to stay at it 24 hours a day if necessary, till 50,000 books are in that truck. And he said, apparently, okay.
No, he said, okay.
Yeah, I guess. But that's
Well,
again, I learned that from Larry, and I learned
right.
that from Catherine Hadsell, who said, turn it over to Dick DeFano or to your vendors to do it. You see how one thing spills over to another. And then in years later in telling the story, Johnny Hyde, the great disc jockey, now gone, was one of the five. And somebody said to him, and I happened to be sitting at the table, how did you do that? I mean, my God, I'd have trouble finding San Diego, finding the printing plant, taking him hostage, learning how to print, learning how to bind, and doing all that. How'd you do that? And he said, oh, Mr. Gay, pardon my French, but this is verbatim, Mr. Gay lent us his balls.
I really need to talk to your wife.
You see the truth in that? You know,
I
I didn't
do.
know how they were going to do it. I just figured if I said it with enough verve, you know, you're going to go do this and this and this. I didn't want, you know, and I thank God we didn't have a follow-up conversation like, well, what should we do first and second? So on. There's five of you. You're a committee. Work it out. You got 8, 9 hours between here and San Diego. Have a plan when you get there.
Yeah, exactly.
Call me when you're almost back in town. And off they went. But again, it came from taking notes, learning from this situation, applying it to this situation, spilling it over to this situation.
And that makes perfect sense. And we are again out of time. Listen, this, as you noted in the very beginning, this is a very large chapter. We're only at page 222. And there's a lot more to talk about. So if you don't mind, let's pick this up again next week.
All right, happy to do it.
All right. I'd see when a man does what I tell him to do, it makes my day. It
I
really
was hope I was
does.
hoping you'd feel that way.
I do. I do.
Because
And
even though it's over the phone, I'm afraid of you.
well, you should be. That's a healthy attitude to have. Look, sometimes I scare myself.
I was talking to Gigi about something that you and I were going to do or have done or something. And she said, have you run that by Denise? And I said, no, but I will.
I love Gigi. I do. Well, listen, this is always so much fun. It really is the best part of my week. So, Ben, tell people where they can find you, your mentoring program, and of course, the sales Bibles, the closers.
Well, if you're interested in our mentoring program where I do for people what Dr. Napoleon Hill did for me, just send me an email and somewhere in it say mentoring. Doesn't have to be a long text. It could be in the subject line and I will respond with a no cost, no obligation email that explains our mentoring program, how it works, what it costs, etc. So send me an email at B as in Ben, F as in Frank, G as in Gay, the numeral 3, BFG3 at directcon, DirectCon as in November dot net. Just say mentoring. And then if you want to get the books, which you should, if you're in selling, I assume you sort of are, you wouldn't be listening to us. Not having the closers, there are many great books out there, but not having the closers is a tragic error. It is the most popular, best-selling books on selling and closing ever written. And you can find them with special pricing and free shipping, signed, dated, and guaranteed at stores, stores.ebay.com. com/ all one word, Ronzoni Books, RONZONEBOOKS. So I appreciate that mention, Denise. Tell them what you're doing, because you're doing some exciting stuff.
I am. You know, I've been podcasting for 16 years, which still just shocks me almost into silence, but it has been 16 years. And over the years, I've had people say, "Can you teach us how you do it?" And it's, oh, you know, I'm always busy. I'm building websites. I don't consider myself to be any kind of an educator. I'm too bussy for that. But as it turns out, I love mentoring people who want to get their voice heard. And I'm doing a lot of it, thoroughly enjoy it. And I get to meet people who are either brand new at podcasting or are thinking about podcasting, or, you know, they've been doing it for a while, but, you know, the spark is gone. It's not working as well as they hoped it would. I love to mentor with people who want to get their voice heard. I'm easy to find. You can find me online. You can't throw a stick on me or Ben without hitting either of us on the internet. But you can also, oh my goodness, the rain just, wow. It sounded like a jet plane just flew over my house, and that's the rain hitting it.
Wow.
You're welcome to call me directly, toll free at 888-719-6711. Again, that's 888-719-6711. Leave a message and I will return your call just as quickly as possible. It may be just a quick, you know, hey, how are you doing? You can ask me questions. You can hire me to work with you, but I'm here to help. So, Ben, we will start this all over again next week, and thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. As always, I enjoyed it, and I made lots of notes. I learned from this. You're going to be in a book soon.
Uh-oh. Well, actually, you are, so there's that. All right, well, I'll talk to you next week. Tell Gigi hello for me.
I shall. Have a great
Okay.
day.
You too.